Welcome to the Religion of Hockey podcast. We are back, episode 12. Some new news to discuss. We'll also be discussing and ranking our top 10 defensemen in the NHL right now. Joined by Nico and Jay. How's it going, boys?
What up? How are ya? Let's go. Hey, I got a news update for you guys regarding my own life.
Whoa.
Okay, so, you know, I work in radio. You may or may not know, I work in radio. And I recently was put on to becoming an EMT, which is I don't even know what it stands for, emergency medical technician. So I'm gonna be joining the medical field now. It's actually pretty cool because I'm gonna be able to like go to like these different sporting events, like sit on the sidelines and just, you know, if they need help, I'll help them. So
get to watch free games, basically.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I don't know, it was something that was interesting in my life that I'm doing. But anyway, anything going on with you guys?
I've been sitting in my room for the past 2 years. No, not really. Jay.
I've just been working, and that's pretty much it.
Boo this man.
You guys are so boring. Come on, you guys do. Have you guys done anything this summer though? For real, like, have you guys done anything?
For the first time in a while, this is like one of my first summers where I work a lot, to be fair, but now all I'm doing is just working. And then when I'm home from work, I'm just pretty tired, so I usually just chill, watch Netflix, play Xbox. But yeah, this is pretty much, it's one of my more boring summers, but it's been very relaxed and nice because usually like my family likes to travel a lot, but this has been nice.
Okay, boring Jay. I'm kidding.
Yeah. All right, Grant.
You can call it boring. It's been great, dude. Yeah, sleeping a lot is nice.
I don't blame you.
I mean,
you,
that's the life, though.
Yeah, I don't blame you for that, dude. I feel like I've done a lot of things, and I've done nothing all at the same time. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I've been doing a whole bunch of stuff in radio. Like, I've been traveling a whole bunch. My aunt got married, and she has this new cool house, so I've been, like, chilling at her new house. You ever go to someone's house, and it's, like, it's not, like, super
gold
cool?
Gold digger.
Well, no, I mean,
gold digger.
What does this even make? What? But no, you ever go to someone's house, and you're, like, it's not your house, but it's someone else's, and you feel like it's cool. You know what I mean? If that makes sense.
It's like the house when you were a kid that's like the snack house. Like, you only
go there.
Like,
yeah.
It's like the go-to house with your group of friends. Like, no matter, for whatever reason, you always meet up at that house. It's like that.
Yeah.
Right?
That I've kind of, yeah. It's kind of funny. They keep making the jokes that I only show up on Sundays for food. So that's all I've been doing. But yeah, I feel like the summer's gone by really fast. It's already almost August. Mitch Marner hasn't signed yet.
Honestly, I've been expected to miss hockey a lot more, and I miss hockey, but like, I don't know, I'm not really ready for a full season to start yet. It's kind of weird, and it'll probably hit in like August and September, but like, I honestly expected to miss hockey a lot more. But all the like the rumors and stuff have still been going on. Freaking Mitch Marner and all those other RFAs are still not signed yet. Can't wait to have like 15 Nylander situations in December.
You know,
no, it's great. Everyone's helping out Tampa Bay for no reason. Why do we?
Thank you. I love you. Thanks a lot, man.
Let's get into that right now. So Vasilevskiy signs an extension. What's his extension?
It was
8 years.
We are prepared.
Yes. I'm totally not making this up right now.
I'm prepared. It's 8 years, 9.5 mil. I'm prepared.
Man, 8 years, 9.5. Does this set the new goalie market?
No. I think Carey Price did.
Price is still at 10.5, and he had, at the time, his 8-year contract. I think it's 6 years now because it's the second. Yeah, it will be 6 years, 10.5. So he's still the top dog, which he deserves to be. Top.
Then you got Bobrovsky at 10.
Coming soon. But yeah.
Yeah, Bobrovsky at 10. And to me, this contract just says, man, that John Gibson contract is one of the best in the league right now. I think John Gibson is better than Andrei Vasilevskiy. Andrei Vasilevskiy did win the Vezina Trophy this past season, but for the most part, it was based on wins and him being a part of a good team. His save percentage was good. Ben Bishops was better, and he should have won the Vezina.
Not to mention, their backup when he played the 20 games was crazy good, too. Like,
yeah, he got a lot of wins too. Louis Domingue was freaking clutch, man. But Vasilevskiy, again, he's the type of goaltender that makes those highly real saves, is I think a good goaltender makes those elite saves, but hasn't really proved himself immensely in the playoffs yet. He just turned 25. He is still young, but that contract doesn't kick in until 2020, 2021, so it will be a year away. I mean, Vasilevskiy, to me, he's the goaltender you take a risk on. He's younger, still has so much potential, and again, could win another Vezina. I think that's totally possible when it comes to him, and one of the best potentials goalie-wise in the league. I still think there's better guys out there right now, but there's no reason why Vasilevskiy shouldn't improve overall and be a game-changing goaltender more than he already is right now.
Okay, I got a question. So I feel like this doesn't get asked a lot, but do you think winning the Vezina means you're the best goaltender?
No, not in Andrei Vasilevskiy's case. He's not.
It means you're the best goalie for that year for your team, if that makes sense.
Like, it's weird, right? Yeah. It's so weird asking that question because you see... It's like, with any, I mean, obviously it's just an award and it's just what people vote on, blah, blah, blah. I wish that they would do, no, what's the award that all the players vote on? The Hart?
That was the other one. The Ted Lindsay?
Ted Lindsay, yeah. I wish the players would vote on all the, for every trophy. Because I feel like
I think they voted Carey Price as the best goaltender, I'm pretty sure.
Like, I would let them vote all, like, at the end of the season, if they can. I mean, I know it's kind of hard with schedules and stuff, but if they could vote for every trophy, I would take the players' option over, you know, the writers and stuff. I mean, I know these people watch analytics. I know they do all that kind of stuff, watch it from afar. But to actually play against these athletes and see how good they are stopping you from scoring, like, I feel like it's a lot different than looking at a piece of paper and looking at metrics and stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like,
you get the better experience, yeah. But I feel like writers' opinions, I think it should maybe be, again, I think there should be both. You should have the player options and the writer options. I don't know if you should have the player options over the other, because I think an example of that was this past season, and they voted Carey Price the best goaltender. I think if you go by past performance and everything, he's the best goaltender in the world because he's proven himself as the most talented when he's on his game. But you also have that side of things, because I don't think they're going on this past season or the last few seasons even, because Carey Price in the past couple of seasons hasn't been the top goaltender. I think we can agree on that. Yeah. And I feel like people go on, I feel like players especially go on more of just overall hype to players' names. Again, Carey Price, I think, yeah, again, they go on track record more than actual past performance. And I think that's something to factor in, especially when you're going on a yearly basis award like the Vezina Trophy, the best goaltender for this past year. Carey Price was great, but I don't know if I trust Carey Price as the best goaltender this
like,
past year.
The thing, the like, what, as like, as a guy who's played hockey and I think at pretty decent level, triple A, like, I think the hardest working and the hardest to score against goaltender, and you preluded to it earlier, is John Gibson. Like, John Gibson just works so hard in every situation. It's just hard, genuinely hard to score against that man.
He's just too calm, but like, he's so wild at the same time. I don't know. I don't understand.
I can only imagine trying to do the, and I would hate to do these 1v1 drills against him. Like, they're, oh my God, like, Jesus Christ. And I can only imagine, and he's the kind of goalie that goes, he's kind of like Marc-Andre Fleury, who goes hard and practices and just doesn't give up anything, doesn't matter if it's practice or a game. But John Gibson, yeah, if they were going to vote anybody, he's just different. I mean, I know the team kind of gave up towards the end of the season there.
Yeah, that defense was really underratedly bad. It was not good.
It wasn't underrated. I think all of them are like, yeah, you know, we don't want Carlisle here. And you know, the season's over. I think we're done here.
Cam Fowler's just like, nope, at that point.
Even John was like, you know, he pulled himself out of the game.
Yeah, almost.
I remember that.
He pulled himself out of the Vezina. Yeah. Honestly, at the first, like, I would say until maybe like the All-Star game, I had John Gibson as my Hart Trophy finalist. I have him as my number one guy. And I'm not kidding. He was my number one guy for a long time there. When Anaheim was still in that playoff race, he was undeniably the best goaltender in the world. And I think because that defense kind of shut down and Carlisle kind of just gave up, I think his numbers suffered. But I don't know. I think when he's on his game right now, he's the best goaltender in the world. And he's proved that with Anaheim. If that defense gets better, man, he'll be winning a couple of Veznas at least. And with Team USA in 2022 Olympics, that's going to be fun.
Right on. Hey, so since we're talking about Vasilevskiy, let's talk about the Callahan trade really quick. So, why?
Ottawa, why are you helping the Tampa Bay Lightning? Why?
Thank you, Ottawa. I love you. Peace out. Let's go.
I don't understand this. There's just things that have. It's like putting pickles on a peanut butter jelly sandwich. Why? Why? Why are you doing that?
And Callahan's not going to play for them either. It's so great.
I don't understand. I don't understand.
Why is they've become the new Chicago Blackhawks? Why is everyone helping them like retain like Braden Point? They have 10.9 million in cap space, which is more than enough to sign Braden Point now. So it's like, why?
I'm going to go on Ottawa's defense here, okay? So they save a little bit of, or so they get more cap space, so they get closer to the cap floor. They also save some more salary, which, let's be honest, Eugene Melnyk, that's pretty much all he wants right now. It's an Ottawa Senators move. What can I say? It makes sense for them, but for them only, really.
Can we talk about the funniest thing in the world?
That means it's bad. What you just said just means it's bad. Like,
the funniest thing happened, too. So Ottawa was rumored to be signing Chris Kunitz, and then he announces his retirement.
Nope.
Like, oh my god.
He yeeted out of there.
He literally retired to not go sign with...
Why would you go to Ottawa if you're Chris Kunitz, man? Like, there's no reason to.
Well, he went to Chicago, which is pretty random, last season. So,
I mean, yeah.
Like, that was... I just want to point out, I was Chris Kunitz's biggest fan as a Blackhawks guy. Like, I went to, I think, 6 games last season, and he scored in 4 of them. So, I just want to point out, and I yelled, I almost got a Chris Kunitz jersey, by the way, too, with a Blackhawks one. I was pretty close. I was pretty close. Speaking of pretty close, I like this transition, Vegas was pretty close to signing Gusev. Psych. trades them to New Jersey. Man, New Jersey's like, Taylor Hall, I love you. Just
Taylor Hall, please stay. We are not desperate.
Taylor Hall, please stay. We'll sign everybody and anybody.
Everyone.
We'll sign everybody. Okay. Is it just me? I mean, I know you're a Rangers guy. Or does it seem like between New Jersey and New York to make the playoffs next season, doesn't it feel like New Jersey's doing a little bit more than New York is right now?
I think both teams are trying. I think New Jersey, yes, but they kind of have to with the Taylor Hall situation. I think they're stuck in that corner. With New York, they have a choice. I don't think New Jersey really has a choice right now, and I think like Ratio definitely accepts that. And he's made good moves. I mean, free agency's done well. I like the moves that he has made so far, and Gustav should be a pretty good low-risk guy for them. But yeah, I think New York is more... having it patient. I think New Jersey, after they made the playoffs 1 year, kind of went balls to the wall because they were a playoff team. They were coming off that rebuild, but that rebuild obviously snuck up to them when guys like Taylor Hall were injured. But I think for New Jersey, if they get a decent goaltender, which right now Corey Schneider and Blackwood are not that. Sorry, Devils fans.
Blackwood's decent.
I think they can make. I mean, Blackwood. Blackwood
in limited action. In limited action, yeah. He was decent last season. You know, if they could figure out, this is my thing with Corey Schneider. I wrote this whole little article about Corey Schneider earlier. Go look up Puck Prose. Not a big deal. I wrote about how I think if Corey Schneider and Blackwood can do like a Robin Leonard Grice kind of thing, where both of them play, you know, 40 games each. I know Blackwood hasn't been tested in the NHL for long periods of time, but it's worked out. This platoon thing has seemingly worked out for a couple different teams. Like you're gonna see Chicago do it this year as well with Leonard and Crawford. Like it's gonna happen. It might happen again with the Islanders, whoever they have in there now. Like
Varlamov, I guess.
Yeah,
and definitely in Anaheim, where they won't definitely play John Gibson every damn game. For sure.
They're
gonna have to play. No, well, not really. I mean, if Ryan Miller's forget that. I'm not talking about that. Don't get me into Ryan Miller. He's amazing. But yeah, if Corey Schneider can just if they just play him like 35 to 40 games. And if he has a 915 to a 920 save percentage, along with Blackwood having that same amount, they're a playoff team. And going along with Gusev, 4.5 for 2 years? Like, that's not. I don't think it's bad. It's not. I mean, it seems like it's a lot of money Because it was kind of like the same thing with Radulov when he came over, right? He signed for like a he signed like a $4.5 million 1 year deal with Montreal, and I was like, "Yeet, that's a little much." Like I didn't think.
I disagree because apparently he's been better than Panarin and Radulov in the KHL.
Points wise, yeah. But he's also on SKA, the most dominant team.
Of course, but to me, it's like 4.5 for Radulov was obviously amazing for what he put up. So like.
No, I know.
2 years isn't bad. It's not a lot of term. And 4.5, if he turns out, even if he's like a high-end third-line guy, that's still a decent contract. Like, it's not horrible.
This also,
I think it's worth taking that risk, for sure.
This also means that Vegas is never going to sign any Russian players now, right? Like,
it's not happening.
I mean, it's been after
the job. How did this team go from not having a team to being struck like so quickly?
Well, because they're good.
Crazy. They're good, and that's what happens to good teams. I just think going with... with what happened with Shipachop, he's literally bad-mouthed the Vegas Golden Knights organization to every Russian player in the KHL and is like, yo, if you're going to try and don't sign with them, they're just going to mess with you over. And I could see that and that happens with a lot of different teams with signing players from overseas, right? Like, if you're not good, you're going to be sent to the minors. That's as simple as it is.
Oh yeah, Oshie getting up, yeeted out of here. He's gone.
Yeah,
he did the
same thing. It's like, well, why are we going to keep you on the roster making NHL money if you're not an NHL player? And these players come over with these super high egos of themselves. And I'm not saying that that's every player, but...
it's also not a bad thing every time either.
Yeah, and it's like, but if you're not up to par or you're not going to make it in the league, like, what did you expect? You come here, you take it. It's like players going over to the KHL. Like, if you're going to go over there and try and make a career yourself and you're not going to make it in Russia, like, why are you going over there? And, like, it's kind of one of those. Does that make sense? Like, like, if you're going to try and take a risk on yourself, you're taking a risk. Like, though, and if it goes badly, why are you going to go badmouth an entire organization? And again, I don't know what Shipachop did, but I feel like that has some correlation between the two. Like,
no, well, it's I feel like players have the right to speak out. Like, we just saw what Nikita Sherbak did to LA and Montreal. They kind of badmouthed them in Russian, and honestly, they have a right to do that once they're out of there. They never had a chance to, you know, actually give their opinion on anything because they're always outside. Like, imagine going to like a place like just like China where you don't understand where anything's going on. Like, imagine players speaking French in the locker room when you're just trying to learn English. Like, they have the right to like finally share their opinion, because if they did that while they're on the teams, like, they'll be like they'll be crucified for it, because it's not how you're supposed to act. So now that they're finally out, I kind of agree with them, and I kind of like,
yeah, but look at
feel
the coaching.
Them where they want to
look at the coaching that those guys had. Though he had, who did Sherbak have? Michel Therrien and who's the one guy that's there right now?
Willie Desjardins.
Claude Julien.
Claude Julien. Are those guys that are going to tell you, it's okay, buddy, we'll listen to what you have to say? No, they're not. They're experienced coaches that are just going to do whatever they're going to do. Willie Desjardins, different thing. He was just an idiot. And what he
did, he's just dumb.
And he got fired for it. And it's not helping when Sherbak's Russian, right? Like, and it doesn't help when you have a guy like Kovalchuk, who is considered one of the best Russian players of all time, and in the NHL, like, it doesn't help when he's on your team getting healthy scratched, openly saying how bad the coach is. Like, those are two different things. Like, I think with what's going on in Vegas, I don't know. And I think I'm coming off like in a way where it's like, oh, only Russians do this. Like, no, look at Eriksson too, who's done the same thing for the Canucks, who went over to Sweden and said how bad the coaching staff is, but he can't be traded because nobody wants him. Like,
it's funny, Sherbak wouldn't even known that about Kovalchuk, because apparently, from his words, they stuck him in the AHL, and apparently he was on the third line in the AHL, and they put a defenseman on the wing on line two.
And I was like, "What?" For success, right there.
apparently, they put a defenseman on line two instead of him. Just because of his size or something.
Maybe
like
he's
that,
just not good. Maybe yeah. He needs to just
I think the type of team good. To put him in the
Getting
AHL
back
because
to the
of
original
his size.
Conversation, I think for I was just gonna say this earlier, but it's funny that there might be a realistic chance that all New York and New Jersey teams make the playoff this year. And that's kind of crazy to think about. Just because, like, what? New Jersey, New York Rangers, and New York Islanders. Obviously, the Rangers are a little bit more of a stretch, but they have Panarin now.
Wait, Jay, you think the Buffalo Sabres are making the playoffs?
Well, I didn't really count.
Buffalo's in New York.
New York,
no,
man.
I know that, but I didn't really like count.
Now all the Sabres fans are going to come after us now, Jay.
Yeah. I don't care. Head. I really don't.
No, you know.
When I say New York and New Jersey, I mean the Rangers, Islanders, and Devils. Like, I mean the team names that they're like.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
where they're not where they're placed by location.
Not you, by, like, Utica. Not you, Utica. Not you.
Yeah. No, but Rangers is a little bit more of a stretch, but they're obviously going to get back to it. But maybe not this year, I guess, because the Rangers aren't that great. But in 2 years, I can easily see the New York Rangers, New York Islanders, and New Jersey Devils, not teams in New York, because apparently I'm going to get slewed by Sabres fans. They definitely have a realistic chance to make the playoffs, which is kind of crazy. But, yeah, it's more just, yeah. That's pretty much my take on, like, that whole issue.
Oh, that whole saga.
I just hate... Why is Ottawa helping the Tampa Bay Lightning?
Oh yeah, that trade. That trade.
I think Ottawa. Why? I think Ottawa just wants to make some friends in the league.
Like, I don't get it. I really don't get it.
I don't understand it either. I'm excited.
Yeah. Pierre Dorian's just trying to do anything at this
point.
We're
just gonna agree to, like, call it a dumb thing that happened. And again, I just treat it like the old Chicago Blackhawks, where everyone's just kind of like helping them in weird ways. But let's move on to, I would say, some bigger news. Is more prominent news, the Paul Fenton firing.
You think? That was pretty big.
Yeah.
Can we just give that 14 month respect? 14 months as an NHL GM, Paul Fenton.
Let's give Paul Fenton a 14 second moment of silence, shall we?
I will do that.
Starting now. And done.
Yeah, that's it. I'm not doing it. But it's kind of weird seeing a guy who came from under David Poile to be in this bad. Like, we know David Poile, obviously, he's pretty good at his job. I mean, the players he's brought in are pretty good. Obviously, the Seth Jones for Johansson wasn't as good as he wanted it to be. But, like, it wasn't horrible. It was still pretty bad, though. We'll get into it, but Seth Jones is a pretty good defenseman. But, you know, I just think that for what he's done, like, he's brought in, like, his defense core is, like, when Subban was there. And I guess still, and that's crazy to say that even though Subban isn't there, they're still one of the best defense cores in the whole league. And, like, defensive championships, of course. And their offense on paper, like, here's the issue. People say, oh, he hasn't done anything just because his team hasn't done well. But all a GM can do is put a team that looks good on paper. Like, he really can't do much else. Like, he can only bring in players. He can't make them play how he wants to play. That's for a coach. So when he brings in a guy like Kyle Turris, who, like, was amazing in Ottawa in that Stanley Cup run, that seemed good. He brought in a guy in Mikael Granlund. That seemed to get pretty good. And it's not really his fault that it didn't work out. Obviously, there's some blame to put on him, but he's been so good. And then you have Paul Fenton, this guy that came from under his wing, go to Minnesota. And I don't remember the hype. I wasn't really paying attention, but... I don't think there was that much hype, but it was just kind of like he was there and he's hired. And now, after being linked to Poile, he was absolute garbage. Like absolute garbage.
I want to say that with Michael Russo of The Athletic, he dropped some gigantic bombs in one of his articles after the firing. And apparently, one of the big things he said was that multiple employees throughout the Minnesota organization ended up complaining about not just the moves that Paul Fenton made, but how he acted against others and how he kind of disrespected the culture that was built there under Leopold, the owner there. And that was one of the most fascinating things to me, because I don't think he was fired just because of the moves that he made. I think he was also fired for the way that he just commanded himself in Minnesota.
The locker room?
Yeah, it's kind of that situation. It's kind of more the locker room mischief up in the managerial spot. I think, again, if those reports are true, that's pretty terrible look on his end. He was a terrible GM and a terrible person. I don't know. I feel like it was more of a franchise move rather than just a pure managerial move. But I think for Minnesota, pulling the plug right now, I think is smart. I personally wouldn't have given him another chance after some of the moves that he made, man. I wouldn't have. I've been giving him 14 months of a couple of those moves was pretty, I think that was giving him a break there.
This seems like not only is it a misstep by Minnesota, but it's like, how are you going to let him do your draft, do your free agency, and then fire him? What? Why? Why did you wait so long? What did you think?
They must have been on the tip. He must have been on, like, the clock on that draft. And then I think he had a decent draft. And then a free agency, that Matt Zuccarello contract. Oh, my gosh.
It just makes no sense how you're going to let a guy wait that long, be in your organization for that amount of time, knowing that you're probably going to do this anyway, and then fire him. Like, what? I just don't. It's just weird how fast Minnesota has went down the drain. Like, it was just a couple. It was like two seasons ago where they went on like a 28 game winning streak and everything was all happy. You're all woo, and then yeah,
woo.
And then now you're back here, and it's like the mid 2000s again, where you have like one good player and a whole bunch of players that are nothing, and then maybe Devin Dubnyk's a good goalie.
Like, yeah, I don't know if he's good anymore. I'm not sure about that.
It's whatever, but you get what I'm saying. Like, he's probably the best player on that team, like, next to Ryan Suter. Like, I don't know. It's just so strange. They're in such a weird place right now that they're not necessarily in a rebuild. They're not necessarily contending.
I think Paul Fenton put them in their spot, in that spot, though, because he made rebuilding moves, like getting rid of Charlie Coyle, bringing in guys like Ryan Donato, which was, frankly, one of his only few good moves. But then he goes out and trades guys like, then you trade other guys, and then you make signings like the Matt Zuccarello signing, and then you try to have all, you, and then you have all these statements. I remember
the
Rider
trade.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Yeah, that was a trade for, I think Victor Rask was a couple years younger, but I feel like he was trying to rebuild and contend for the playoffs at the same time, which we know never has ever seemingly ever worked in the NHL. It has never ever done that, and he made that mistake at the first part. And that Matt Zuccarello contract again, I heard quotes around that one from him himself saying that he wanted to contend for the playoffs, but why are you trading Charlie Coyle? What are you doing? And I feel like when it came to Fenton, he had no direction. Some of the moves, yes, he did make were good, but I think just the dagger was the misdirection and the lack thereof of one, and I think that's why he ultimately got fired. And I think that's the reason, because I think Minnesota, I think they do want to make the playoffs. I think they still do want to do that. Leopold said that he wanted to have a contending team and still make the playoffs, which I think is a mistake for them, but I think they still want to do that, and Paul Fenton was putting him in both directions, which will never, ever work.
So, yeah, Paul Fenton, we ripped on him for a long time. Actually, in one of our podcasts, we ripped on him for like a solid like 20, 30 minutes. It was just ripping on Paul Fenton.
It was rough.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Nino Niederreiter for Rask.
Yeah, I brought that baby up. It was horrible. It was really bad. Like, what a trade. But yeah, Paul Fenton, not that great. Obviously, that's why he got fired. And when you're not that great and you're bad and you're like just a bad person for the clubhouse.
If you're trash.
He's a bad person.
No, it's just a bad guy to have in the locker room. That's just like a double like dagger. That's just like a double like,
I'll tell you,
that's
what,
like a double edged
sword. Not only
like,
are you bad,
it's like a double edged sword where it's like, okay, you're bad at your job and you're bad at working with people, so you might as well just
you're
fired.
Like a trash monkey.
Anyway, we're gonna move on to the biggest topic.
No, Jay, you cannot move on.
We're moving on to the biggest topic of today's episode, and that is the top 10 defensemen in the NHL heading into next year, the 2019-2020 season. Yeah, let's get into it. Nico, who do you have at number 10?
Okay, dokie, okay. Here we go.
Okie dokie.
Okie dokie now. Here we go. It's me, Mario. All right, so I actually have 12.
Wow. So you can do 12, 11, and 10.
This was so hard. I had so much. This was so hard. I literally had. So I did my top 10. I wrote out a little thing about everybody. It's all nice and cute. And then I watched like 10 different videos on everybody else's top 10. I'm like, well, you know what? They're right too. So I started cutting and everything out. And then it became a top 12 list. So my number 12 right now is John Klingberg. We're going to talk about him a little bit later. My number 11 is Colton Parayko. I don't think anybody else has it in their top 10, but
Parayko, not Parayko.
I don't know why I keep saying I think the way I Parenko.
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 I know. It's just the way. It's just the way I say it, man. I don't know. You gotta get over it. So
you Mid-Eastern or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. You Mid-Eastern. No. Midwestern, dude.
Oh yeah.
Jesus. So yeah, I have Colton Parenko at my number 11, and it was between him and Doughty for my number 11 and 10 spot. But for Colton Parenko, really quick though, it's drafted 86 overall in 2012, so he's right in his prime. He's 26 years old. He's a Stanley Cup winner, 12 points in 26 games. He essentially kind of replaced Kevin Shattenkirk. Does anybody really remember Kevin Shattenkirk being on the Blues?
Yeah, I do.
I remember him on the Blues and the Capitals. For sure.
Like, I know people remember him being there, but, like, in a whatever sense, it's like, you kind of forget about him when you think about, like how great Colton. Yeah, you think about how great Colton has been. Not great, but how he's slotting into that top four, top two, position, and how he gets you points and actually plays defense, which is what I appreciate about his game. He has a big shot. I think he has one of the hardest shots in hockey, to be honest. I really like watching. I like watching him play, and just he looks like he's always having fun. So that's what I have for him. So I mean, he hits people.
That's why he's a top 10 defenseman. He looks like he's always having fun.
No, it looks like he's having fun out there. Go look at him. No, but you know what I'm saying, like he when you're having fun out there, you tend to do a lot better. But he also has one. He also was on one of the best contracts. He has 2 years left with F5.5. In 322 games played so far, is 131 points. But definitely, he's one of the new defensemen where it's like a new two-way defenseman where, you know, he can play that big defensive game, but then also still get a lot of points. Like, by a lot of points, I mean like 35 to 40 points per season. He's not going to blow you away with his offensive numbers, but it's still a pretty good average on the regular. But my number 10, getting into our top 10, though. For my number 10, I have Drew Doughty. Everybody here disagrees with me, and I just think you have one bad year. So I'll just get into it. So he's 29 years old. He was drafted second overall in 2008, a two-time Stanley Cup winner, a 10-time All-Star, Norris Trophy winner in 2016, voted in top 10 in Norris voting 8 of his 11 seasons. And don't get me wrong, he had a bad season last year at the Kings. But then again, who had a good season with the Kings last year?
Keyword, he was a All-Star. He was, All-Star.
Alex LaFollo had a pretty good season.
Okay, yeah, exactly. But nobody had a good season on the Kings. Like, I just don't think that he just up and forgot how to play.
By the way, I don't think
like,
he's I think he's like 11, 12 for me. I don't think he's horrible and trash. He's just not on my list. Yeah, I think he's number 11, number 12. Right,
I'm not
there.
Pointing you out, but thanks for saying this.
He's pointing me out, Jay. Let's be real here.
I'm pointing you out. You had him in your good tier on your stupid video.
Okay.
No, I'm joking.
He had Subban in his elite
videos.
Tier. Let him be.
Yeah, it's
no, it's a good. No, I like that. That's amazing for sure. Oof. That's not an oof. That's not an oof.
That is a big
no. It's
oof.
Not.
So for
if I had an oof tier, Daddy would be there just for you.
There we go. I need the big oof. So nobody. I mean, again, like for LA, nobody was really scoring last year. It was in saying all this. Obviously, I like Drew Doughty enough to put him in my top 10. But you're definitely right in the aspects where he could be anywhere between 10 and 15. I just feel out of all those 10 to 15, like those five players there, I feel like he's the best player. I think going since this list is going into next season, who's going to be a top 10 defenseman? And that's what I was kind of going for. It's hard not to put him as a top rebound candidate for me. Just he's such a competitor where it's gonna be like he's gonna look at this last season and be like, no, that's not gonna happen again. And I can see him having a bounce back. He could possibly have like a 65-70 point season and win the Norris next year.
Wow.
Like I feel like he's gonna be that type of player. He's gonna be like, I can't let that happen again, like what happened last year. And he still put up 45 points in 82 games on a bad offensive team. I don't think LA is very much improved anyway, so I don't think they're going to be this big revelation, but I think Drew Doughty is definitely going to step up his game and play great defense and have good offensive numbers because they're going to need him to be that great offensive player. But all in all, he had 8 goals, 35 assists, 45 points last year in 82 games, and he is my top my number 10 defenseman in this
list.
Okay,
so for
me, be quiet, Doughty fan.
For me,
yeah, okay,
at number 10, this is strictly for Gravity's and Nathan's entertainment. I have John Klingberg. For me, he was right around the edge. And because last year he had a better year than Doughty, he made the top 10 for me. So John Klingberg is my number 10 defenseman. He had...
Jay, it's not just for entertainment. You're feeding the facts right
now.
No,
I actually do
believe... People who know the facts,
obviously,
he's a top 10 defenseman.
Obviously, it is for Grav, but I actually do think he's a top 10 defenseman just because offensively he's so dominant. 45 points this year. 67 points in 2017-18 season, where people finally started to realize like how good he was. Because even in 2015-16, he had 58 points, but nobody really knew what he was about. And now he's just kind of blown off the scene. He's become a number, like a top two defenseman, and he's really helped that Dallas Stars team that before the trade deadline wasn't that great because they were so top heavy defensively and offensively. So now we have John Klingberg, who's really helped this team, really helped them get to the second round. So yeah, John Klingberg, number 10. He's just kind of there for me, and he's number 10.
I'm going to go to my top 10, and I got my Texas-born stud, my boy Seth Jones. And when it comes to Seth Jones, I don't think he's underrated per se. He had a little bit of a disappointing season, advanced stat-wise, this past season, but I still think he's an excellent defenseman. He's a guy that I think has so much potential, still young, still fantastic. I think there's definitely room to grow when it comes to Seth Jones, but right now I think he's a top defenseman. Defensively, he's very mature, very steady, and offensively, he brings a ton of punch, especially even strength. And I feel like when it comes to Seth Jones, he'll just get even better. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a top 5 defenseman at some point. Right now, I definitely wouldn't say that whatsoever, but a top 10 defenseman, he just barely made my top 10. There was a couple of other guys like John Carlson, Colton Pareko, Shea Theodore that were close to me, but Seth Jones as my number 10, I'm gonna stick with that.
I like Seth Jones, and I was either gonna have him in my top 10 or I just wasn't gonna mention him at all, because I can't not talk about Seth Jones. And just, it's such a hard, this list was so hard. I literally had such a hard time making this one. I love Seth Jones as a player, man. It's like night and day looking at his stats from Nashville to looking at Columbus, right? You see the progression of a player, and I just love what he's become. And he's definitely one of those players where it's like, man, you know, and you know, we mentioned earlier about the Nashville Columbus trade. It's like, man, I think Nashville, especially with the contract that Seth Jones is on for the longest time, it's like, man, imagine that top four with Ellis, Jones, Yossi, Ekholm. Like,
oh my gosh.
Man.
Yeah. Speaking of Seth Jones, he's my number 9 defenseman, which is good, which is that we did in that order. But yeah, pretty much agree with what these guys said. I think obviously the advanced stat metrics weren't as good as people hoped them for be, but he's still young. And like, I think he's one of those players who maybe not everything he does shows up in those advanced stats. Like when you do the eye test kind of deal, you kind of see what he really is about. And again, he's still so young, which for going into next season, I would hope he progressed over the summer. So for me, I think he could take a huge step up, and he's definitely there. So for me, he's number 9, and I actually really like him as a player. Again, obviously, the stats don't really say it, but for me, if you just do the eye test, I really like him and where he's at in his career, and I think he's progressing to be a top 5 defenseman.
Nico, you're number 9.
My number 9 is Alex Pietrangelo, 30 years old this year, drafted 4th overall in 2008 Stanley Cup winner, 19 points in 26 games. I didn't realize he was that good in the playoffs for him. I knew he was a fantastic player for them, but I didn't realize he was getting them points as well. He's been the Blues captain and leader through one of the weirdest times in their history, in my opinion, where it's like, they were coming off that conference final in 2016. They lost. And then next year, it's like, I guess they're a contender, but then they sucked. And then they didn't make the playoffs. And then they sucked again, but then were the winners of the Stanley Cup. Like, it's been such a weird time for him during his tenure as captain. It's like, okay. I guess the only way you could wrap it up is with winning the Stanley Cup. Not that his career's over or anything, but potentially he has 1 year left on his deal. And again, these deals where you have 1 year left for these guys who are, you know, at the level that they are, it's like, man, they're gonna step it up to not only get money, but you know, they want to prove that they could earn that paycheck, right? So, like, looking at him right now, he has the potential to. I don't think he's ever gonna be like a Norris winner kind of guy, but I do think he's gonna be a guy where you're always gonna talk about him as one of the most solid defensemen of his generation from like that 2006 to 2010, whoever was drafted then. You're always gonna think of him as to be one of the top 10 defensemen, which it hasn't always been the I think the circumstance for him, right? I think he started off his career really underrated when nobody really talked about him. And then he turned out to be where everyone was like, oh, I guess he's here, but we don't really think he's that good. And then now he's at the point where he's a Stanley Cup winner. And I do agree with, you have Nate, you're going to have him way up in your list.
Spoiler.
And I can see why. Yeah, I mean, and I can see why. He's a great defenseman, but just some little stats for you right now. So he's second in all-time Blues scoring behind Al MacInnis, and he's second in games. He's second in games played behind only. Can you guess what defenseman this is? Who on the St. Louis Blues in their history has played the most games? He just recently retired, like 2 years ago.
Oh.
Can you guess who? Start. He won the Calder Trophy in 2002. It's a defenseman.
It's a defenseman. No, I got that.
Nico complaining about Jay's quizzes, yet he does this.
Yeah.
All right, it's Barrett Jackman. It's Barrett Jackman.
Oh, him!
Yeah,
I would have never gotten that. Come on.
Hey, I'm just saying. Coming with the stats. So, yeah, Alex Pietrangelo is my 9th overall guy.
Okay, now I'm going to move on to my 9th overall pick. I have a guy that, frankly, is criminally underrated in every sense of the word. I have at number 9, Dougie Hamilton. And I think when it comes to Dougie Hamilton, people definitely like to say that his weaknesses are bigger than they are. I think he's meh defensively. And that's what people like to say, that he's still this trash player defensively. I don't think he is. He isn't the fastest guy, but I think his results are still fine. But the cream of the crop comes in his offense. And I'm not scared to say that he's a top 5 offensive defenseman in the NHL right now. He's that good, he's that impactful, and that consistent. And he's been that way for a while. But with Carolina, especially this past season, he just stepped it up to a just insane level that we haven't seen in a while. And I think when it comes to Dougie Hamilton, again, the offense is what Carolina needed. And that kind of defensive offensive juggernaut, I think that's what Dougie Hamilton is. And I think he's underrated, underutilized, and underlooked. I don't think he's just going to be, I think he's going to be a top 5 defenseman, mostly because of his defensive issues. But the offense, I think, puts him as a top 10 defenseman, at least right now.
For me, I'm just going to agree to disagree because I don't want to get into it because I just don't think. I don't really have anything to say, just that he's not a top 10 defenseman. But you know what? Grab, you have your opinions. You're good. And honestly, it's not horrible. Like, it's not a horrible take, but, you know, I just thought that was kind of out of the blue. Do we want to move on to number 7? I think we do. Number 8. Wait, 10. Yeah, I can't count. number 8, I have my boy, PK Subban. And I know it's a bad pick, but he's my boy, so he's on the list. That's pretty much all I have to say. I could read off a few stats, so you guys don't care. You guys don't think he's a top-down defenseman, but that's fine, because
He's close for me, okay?
You guys don't think so?
Yeah, hey, Jay.
But me, I don't care. I love him. He's my favorite player in the NHL, no matter where he goes. So because of that, he had to be on the list, and I just think he's ahead of Seth Jones, John Klingberg. So, yeah, he's number 8 for me, just because I love him. That's pretty much it.
Can you tell us what his real name is?
Oh, I forgot. Pernell Carl Subban in the building.
There we go.
I never knew what the PK stood for. I thought his parents just named him PK.
So the issue is, Pernell Carl isn't the most hockey and like cool name. It's kind of nerdy and geeky.
Such a lame name.
But PK is sick. Like, that is a sick name.
Pernell Carl. Can you imagine his mom just yelling for the
Pernell?
Pernell.
No, and then when she's really mad at him, Pernell Carl Subban, his full name?
He goes by Carl.
Pernell Carl Sylvester Subban, get your bum down here.
Yes, Mom.
Okay. Mom, I want to go play hockey.
Number 8. No, not until you finish your Brussels sprouts.
Okay. Anyway, right. He had,
do your chores.
Anyway, he had 59 points in the 2017-18 season, 60 points in 2014-15. He's pretty good. I love him, and he's really good. That's it.
That's good.
That's good. Oh, and that's good. Just quickly, I might as well do it now. My number 7 defenseman was Pietrangelo. I just want to add that when Nico said how solid he was, I think that's a perfect word. Like, you never really think of him, but he's always there as, like, that top two, like, solid. He's so sound as a defenseman. Like, solid, great, good. Nico pretty much pointed out everything. He's a Stanley Cup champion now. He deserves it. He's great. And that's why he's number 7 for me. But, yeah.
You can't see me right now, but as soon as you said he's solid and you know he's always there, I just give you a little wink. that's me. Solid and always there.
Okay, Nico, right. You're number 7. Or 8, sorry.
Oh, this is a family-friendly podcast.
You're welcome. You can mute that part.
that's going to make it. We'll fix it in post.
Number 8. No, we're not. Number
we're not going to do that.
Speaking of dirty things, I have John Carlson at number 8. He's 29 years old, drafted 27. Man, all these 2008 draft picks are just, it's so weird. We always talk about how young the league is and all this stuff. The league needs to get younger, but all the best defensemen are between like 28 and like 32. Well,
that's always been the case though. Like defensemen are just like, older.
Ah, well, yeah, I know. But it's just kind of strange to see how different is. Did you know, really quick, did you know that Nashville has the oldest defensive core in the NHL?
Well, still one of the best.
What?
Yeah, they have the oldest defensive core at 29 in 2 days. So,
that's
like,
it's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
LA is the best one. Older? Whoa.
Well, like, well, Ellis is 27, Ekholm's 28, Yossi's 29.
28 or 29?
He's 29. Yeah, he's 29, and then you fill in whoever else you want. And last year they had Dan Hamhuis.
Yannick Weber
down there.
And Dan Hamhuis.
Yeah, and those guys are not young people.
Whippersnappers.
Then, yeah,
young
so
whippersnappers.
It's strange. But anyway, back to John Carlson. So, yeah, he's a player on a Capitals team that, like, obviously he's their best defenseman, but nobody really thinks about him. And he's, like, again, kind of like Pietrangelo. But in a fact where it's like you don't think of him on this team because you have Kuznetsov, you have Backstrom, you have Ovi, you have Holtby, and it's like, and then there's John Carlson. Like, he's always that, and then there's that guy. Oh, right, he's there. Yeah, I mean, the last 2 years he's really stepped up his game, pushing his way into the Norris conversations, getting those top five. He's been in the top five, top seven Norris voting conversation to get in there. But last season he had 70 points, which is the fourth highest scoring in the league, and I wasn't gonna put him in my top 10 until I there's just so many things that he does right, like with offensively, and being the number one defenseman on a Stanley Cup winner does have to put you in there. So like, I would be remiss if I didn't put him in this, but yeah, definitely John Carlson. He's fun to watch, too. Go watch him. He shoots the puck a lot. He hits people. Who doesn't like watching a guy who can hit the guy, take their puck, and go score? I like it. But that's my number 8, John Carlson.
All right. Jay, what is your next pick? Well, I guess I'll go with my pick because
you already
put your 7.
Pietrangelo, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll go to my number 8 pick. My number 8 overall best defenseman in the NHL is Chris Letang of the Pittsburgh Penguins. And when it comes to Chris Letang, I'm not going to lie. I think I mentioned this in my defenseman video. But I used to hate Chris Letang. I don't know why. I have no reason. But I used to just not like him too much. And I didn't think he was that great of a defenseman. But in the past, I would say year, I kind of turned on him a little bit in the better way. His offense is just so impactful. And I think when it comes to Chris Letang, I don't think he's misunderstood. But I think he's just better in ways that people might not think. He's just so good on the power play and such a good offensive guy. The defense, I think, used to be a bigger weakness than it is now. I think he's kind of gotten a lot more solid in that department, both on the penalty kill too, which was huge for Pittsburgh. And I think he's one of the only good defensemen on Pittsburgh on a team that has guys like Jack Johnson and Erica Branson. He's gotten a lot more load defensively, but he's still handled it relatively well. And the offense has already been great with him, and I think it's already been elite, and he's already stepped it up a little bit with Pittsburgh too, and they've needed that over the past couple of years.
Right. I started writing for Penn's Labyrinth as well, which is a Penguins blog for Fansided. And I recently did my top five defensemen in Pittsburgh Penguins history. And let's just say he's number one. Mm-hmm. Like, he is the number one defenseman in the history. He's a three-time Stanley Cup winner. I mean, if he didn't get injured this last season, he would have been my Norris pick and probably a finalist in general.
I had number three in my Norris vote.
Yeah, I mean, like, if he didn't get injured, and this has been for the last couple, his whole career, really, if it not been for injury, he would have won it. I look at 2012, 2013. He had 35 games played, 38 points. He was third in Norris voting then. 2015-16, 71 games played, 67 points, fourth in Norris voting. If he doesn't get injured, he's one of the best defensemen.
Well, that's
in the
what
NHL.
It's always been, right? Can he stay healthy? That's always been the question for Chris Letang. And when he is healthy, he is one of the best defensemen. And for me, he's actually number 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. He's number 6 on my list.
He's number 7 for
that's
me.
That's right. I'm right next to it. But yeah, basically, Chris Letang is just, when he's healthy, he's always on. He's three-time Stanley Cup champion, if I'm correct, right? Three times Stanley Cup champion, like one in 2008, one in 2015-16, the back-to-back championships. And it's just like, it's kind of crazy how sometimes he kind of gets overlooked. I don't know if that makes it like, if you guys feel that.
I have that feeling.
He's always overlooked as a defenseman. But when he's healthy, like when he's going, like he is crazy good. Like in 2018-19, 56 points in 65 games played. That points per game is crazy. Like, that is crazy. Like, the fact that he has 56 points in 65 games. Like, if he gets up to 82 games, that's like a 70-point season. Same thing in 2015-16, mm-hmm. 67 points in 71 games played. Like, if he just played just a little bit more and just wasn't injured all the time, he would be amazing and people wouldn't overlook him. But we're in this situation now where everyone overlooks him because his point levels are low, but it's not even like point, like when he's playing, he's
great.
Well,
but not really low. It's kind of the same thing with John Carlson, where it's like when you think of Pittsburgh Penguins, you're not going to think of, Chris Letang. You're probably going to think of Malkin, Crosby, and Lemieux. Like, and that was my whole thing. When I was writing my list, it was like nobody ever talks about the defenders in Pittsburgh Penguins history. Like, they also had Larry Murphy and Paul Coffey in their list. And with all intents and purposes right now, Chris Letang is the number one or number two leader in every single category in Pittsburgh Penguins history. Like, and again, like we were mentioning, if he wasn't injured, he would have been the second Norris Trophy winner in the history of Pittsburgh. And can you name the first Norris Trophy winner in Pittsburgh Penguins history? Nope.
Okay.
Come on, give me a guess, Grab. I'll give you one. You get one guess. Norris. It's somebody we talked about earlier, and then as a coach,
Paul Fenton.
No, coach. What's his name?
Alan Vigneault, Claude Julien, Willie Desjardins,
Randy Carlyle.
I forget he was like a very good NHL player.
Like he was tongue. Good for like 1 year. He was good for like 1 year, and that was the 1 year that was like the weakest for a defenseman in 1982-83. But Chris Letang is my seventh pick, so whoever has a different seventh pick, go ahead.
Well, my number seven is the bearded beast, Brent Burns. Now, I want to say this. I love Brent Burns' personality. I think his offense is fantastic, but if I see anybody saying that he's even okay defensively, I'm going to fight you. Like, I've seen enough of San Jose in the past few years to say that is not true whatsoever, and his stats back that up. He's terrible defensively, but obviously that's not his bread and butter. He's so good offensively. He's such a fantastic driver of play, especially on the power play where he can just command a power play. Solid goal scoring wise, but just is great playmaker too. And again, I think when it comes to Brent Burns, like a Dougie Hamilton, he makes himself a top 10 defenseman to me with his offense. That's what he does. And he doesn't hide the fact that he's bad defensively. If anything, he just doesn't even try, which, I mean, he doesn't even have great defensive ability. So I honestly don't blame him. But again, I was reluctant to put him higher. I think he's just what he is, a great offense defenseman, and honestly, he doesn't hide the fact, which I do respect.
I agree. I mean, I have him a lot higher, so it's kind of... I disagree with myself on having him higher, and everything that you said, I agree. It's just hard to not have the guy who has won Norris Trophy and leads D in scoring. It's like, man, it's so hard not to have him in this list. But it's so easy not to.
Yeah, you can make a ton of excuses why not.
Yeah, like, it's a weird
number one. He's barely a defenseman. Let's be real here.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll talk about him more when we get up in our list, though. Okay, what is your number seven, Jay?
Well, my number seven is Pietrangelo. My number six is Letang. So
right on. Okay, so I'll take my number six then, because since my number seven is Chris Letang as well. So, my number six pick, though, is Roman Josi. So, he's 29 years old, drafted in the second round, 2008. And I'm only saying he's drafted in 2008 because it's how many players on this top 10 list already have been drafted in 2008. Like, that year probably is one of the best years for drafting defensemen.
For sure.
He's an underrated... I think he was the most underrated defenseman in the league until people started watching Nashville and became smart. Like, do you remember the debates of who was better, him or Weber? Like
Josi and Weber? Yikes.
Yeah, there was so many debates back then. It was like, Josi makes Weber so good. No, Weber scores all the goals. Josi just sets
he's
him
got
up.
The shot.
Yeah, it was so strange. I'm not saying Weber's was a bad defenseman, but Josi was definitely better than him his last couple years there in Nashville. But, I mean... we ended up finding who was the best one out of all of them either way, because when Weber was traded. So he's been a top 10 Norris Trophy finalist every year since he was given that top spot. And he still is. He still is one of the best, even with the trading of PK Subban. He's a five-time All-Star. And if Josi is going, Nashville is pretty much going. I think I've seen, and I don't think there's a player out there, not that there isn't, but I think there's a couple teams where it's like you have certain players where if they aren't going, that team is not doing anything that
Taylor
night.
Taylor Hall.
Yeah. And I think Josi gets the engine revving in Nashville. Because when he's on his game and, you know, snapping pucks up and throwing these amazing saucer passes to different players, or even just taking the shot himself, like, he's a top player for me and gets that team going. And it's not to mention Nashville has been one of the best teams in the league the last couple seasons, and has had one of the best defenses, and he's a big reason why. He's playing for a new contract this year, so, and I'm saying, and there's a couple defensemen who are top two defensemen going into this season without a new contract. So looking at him, he could. Again, I've said this a couple times already, but we could see a Norris Trophy season out of him. He had 59 points this season, which is pretty good. We could see the best season out of Roman Josi this year. So that's why he's my number six.
All right. I'm going to go on to my number six, Dallas Stars great, my boy John Klingberg. Now, I want to say this, that John Klingberg, I think... I don't know if he's one of the more underrated players in the NHL, but I would say one of the more underappreciated players. I think John Klingberg, I think he is, again, kind of like a Roman Josi. If John Klingberg isn't going, then the Dallas Stars offense really isn't. I think John Klingberg has more to do with Dallas's offense and everything, power play, even strength, than I would say any of the forwards, Ben, Sagan, Radulov. I think he's so much more important. And when you look at the Dallas Stars defense, Lindell is decent offensively. Heiskanen is fantastic. But Klingberg is the main guy there. And if he's not going, the team usually isn't. We saw in the playoffs how crucial he was. And he was fantastic. He put up amazing numbers. And I would say in those first couple of rounds was the best defenseman in those first couple of rounds. He was just so effective offensively, so brilliant. And of course, getting that goal versus Nashville in that game six is also very fantastic. But I think when it comes to John Klingberg, the offense that he has, I would put him honestly behind Erik Karlsson as the best offensive defenseman in the league when he is healthy. I think he's that good. And in his prime right now, he will be scary to watch. And at that bargain of a contract, man, as a Dallas Stars fan, he's one of my favorites in the league.
See, I had him at 12 only. I don't think he's the second best offensive defenseman next to Erik Karlsson. I definitely think it's Brent Burns for that one. But he's definitely top five. I think he's always going to be one of those players where it feels like he's been in the NHL forever and at the same time never. At the same time.
Yeah.
It's like he came onto the scene at the age of 22, and like not a lot of people thought of him, scored a bunch, and then he signed a 7-year deal, and it was like, what?
Like, basically,
pretty much.
It was like, yeah. Yeah, it was like, what? Why? Where did this come from?
I remember that contract, and that was like the first year when I became a hockey fan. I'm like, I like Klingberg, that's fun, but like, yeah, that contract
it was strange. It turns out to be one of the best contracts, and still is. I mean, he hasn't had under 40 points in the NHL, and has turned himself into a way better defenseman in the last couple of years. I would say the last 2 years, he's definitely worked on, you know, his positioning and his gap control for sure. Because it was a lot of times where, I mean, you're a Stars fan. How many times was there a time like
he? I would say about
how many times
every...
did Patrick Kane go down the lane and just wreck his life?
Yeah, honestly, there'd probably be like once every two games where he would just make a colossal mistake. And I used to joke with when it first couple of years I watched hockey, I used to joke with some of my family that like that's the Klingberg move right there, just doing nothing or just like falling down or something. But honestly, I haven't seen one of those in like 2 years. He has gotten that down. Honestly, like in those first couple of years, though, he made colossal mistakes. I don't think he was ever truly bad defensively, but the mistakes he did make were absolutely terrible. But he doesn't make those anymore. He does make mistakes. Yeah, sure, obviously, every human does, but he doesn't make those colossal mistakes anymore. Which I think, again, these people that say that he's better defensively, I think he's decent offensively. He's solid, and compared to what he used to be, I'll definitely take that.
Right, and I don't think he'll ever be a Norris Trophy winner, but I think he's going to be a top 10 guy for the next couple years if he stays healthy. I mean, last season he played 64 games, had 45 points, and there's been a couple times in his career already where he's only played around 65 games. So if he can stay healthy, like I don't see him ever reaching 70-75 points. I don't think he can.
I think he might get close with Joe Pavelski being that amazing tipper, but I think about 65 points is maybe a ceiling.
Yeah, I think that's where it is too. But no, I could see how you can have him in your top 10. And I think enough people know about him, but aren't giving him, like you said, the respect and appreciate what he brings to the Dallas Stars. All right, so I did my number six. You did yours. Jay, you said your number six was who again?
Letang. We've already talked about him.
Letang. Right on. Okay, so now we're in our top five. Let's go with your number five pick, Jay.
All right, so my number five pick heading into next season. Unfortunately, I'm not too confident with this pick, which is kind of bad, but I just hope he really doesn't regress because he's finally getting respect he's been due, and that is Mark Giordano, number five, heading into next year just because of how crazy of a season he had this past year. I think because of that, he deserves to have this slot, number five, because he's always been known as a defensive juggernaut. Like, he's always been great defensively. That's never been a question. The issue was his offense was never great. Like, he's 6'1", 200 pounds. Like, he's always been that big guy who can get it done defensively, but offensively, he's struggled. Like, the most points he put up before the season was 56, and before 56 was 48. So it wasn't too much compared to other guys. Obviously, in its own right, it's pretty solid. But compared to these top end defensemen, you have to be pretty up there, pretty far up there in points. So in 2018-19, he put up 74 points, second in the NHL behind Brent Burns, just ahead of Morgan Rielly, who we'll get to. But yeah, Mark Giordano, so good offensively, finally put it together offensively. So with that said, he's number five for me because, again, yeah, he's just been so good, and now he's finally getting respect he's been deserved, which is kind of a theme in my list. Like, a lot of these guys haven't been getting the respect they deserve for one reason or another, but now he's finally getting his stuff going. Nico, number five.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Did I say that's crazy again? Did I say that?
No. I mean, you did say crazy a couple times. I was trying to sing the song. At least I knew how to spell it, right? So me and Nate actually have the same five. So your number five is Morgan Riley, right? Okay, so, I mean, I'm the Leafs fan, so let me take this. So you can shut up.
Just so we're clear, my number four is Morgan Riley, so I might as well hop in.
All right, cool. We're
be
all
quiet, Habs fan. Get out of here.
Be quiet. Quiet, boy.
At least I'm not a toxic Habs fan who's like, Morgan Riley sucks. At least I'm not toxic.
I don't think there's any out there because he's a good old Canadian kid.
Good old Canadian boy.
Dude, I got into this horrible conversation with this Habs fan.
It wasn't me, by the way, because he doesn't follow me.
I usually don't get into like fights on Twitter and stuff because I find them irrelevant. But this guy was just saying how Weber was better than Riley.
Which is idiotic. Idiotic. That is actually dumb. So, as a Habs fan, that is actually stupid. Like, get yourself checked. Like, go to the doctor, make sure your head is on right, because that is ugh.
There we go. So I message in the thread, it starts off with, well, you can't obviously have Morgan Riley ranked ahead of Shea Weber because of the leadership. And I'm just like, what?
I'll be honest. Shea Weber's not. I wouldn't even say Shea Weber's the leader of that team. It's all Brendan Gallagher.
I literally type in. So how does one level of leadership? How does leadership level? How does that work out? And he went into this whole. He sent me a graph of leadership. I don't know where he got a graph.
What?
I don't know where he got a chart. But somewhere, somehow, there was a graph of leadership. And he sent it to me. And he's like, you look like a stat kind of guy, so this is leadership for you. And the chart said, games where Shea Weber led versus games without. Which is essentially games with him playing games without, but he typed
leadership.
And I was like, what? It was just
I should
dope.
Burst his bubble when I say that Brendan Gallagher is the better leader.
Yeah, he's the real leader of that squad.
He is. You can't tell me he's not.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so realistic. So, Morgan Riley, 25 years old, drafted fifth overall in 2012. He's quickly risen in the ranks of defense within his last 2 years, like becoming one of the most lethal players offensively and becoming very underrated defensively. And I mentioned earlier how if there's a team where if Roman Josi isn't going, this team isn't going. I will say if there's a team where if one guy doesn't show up on the team, it falls apart defensively, it's definitely Toronto. Like, without Morgan Riley, this team was an absolute train wreck.
We got to rely on Jake Gardner out there, boys.
Like, it's an absolute train wreck. There was a point where
Roman Polak, Ron Hainsey, let's go. No,
don't disrespect my boy, Roman Polak, man.
So, Connor Carrick, Morgan Riley took like a puck. Morgan Riley took a puck to the mouth, and he was out for like, I think it was like a week or two.
Did you say
and
the F word? I thought that was the.
No. He gets hit in the mouth, and there was like 2 weeks where we were without Morgan Riley. It was the worst play I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen a professional. You ever seen Slapshot? Where it was like the guys are trying to play defense and they tell them not to and they're like, oh, we must. And they play even worse when they're told to. That's kind of how it looked like. You had Roman Polak carrying the puck halfway up the ice, just getting slapped. Like, it was crazy. But anyway, Morgan Riley is definitely one of the best defensive players right now. His ability to read plays and his chemistry with the whole team really makes him a valuable player and like allows him to move up and not put the team in bad scenarios. Overall, he had 20 goals, 52 assists, and 72 points last season, making him my top five player.
I will add to that, but all I got to say is that good old Canadian kid, good player, tries hard, gets out there. I think he's a great player. Yeah, yes. I think he's, honestly, offensively, I think he's one of the more dynamic guys in the league. The obviously the point production entails that. On the power play, he's just so freaking good. And I again, thinking he's one of the top defensemen, I think some people might go against him, saying that he's got Matthews and Marner and Tavares to play with. But people don't really factor in that he's a reason why that offense is so good and always gets producing. John Tavares would never get 47 goals if it weren't for Morgan Rielly on that point, and whatever it might be. He's just an absolute dynamo, and he gets it done. He's just is able to command Toronto just so well, and has done that in the past couple of years. But he's, again, in his prime right now. He's not getting... He's pretty much in his prime. Again, he's in his mid-20s.
He'd be my pick for captain. He's got a lot more time. Just so, you know, he'd be my pick.
I think Auston Matthews will be the captain, but my choice would be Morgan
Rielly.
Well,
that's just because Chris Johnson came out and said that. But if he didn't, I would probably say Morgan Rielly.
I want Morgan Rielly for captain. Yeah. Give it to Captain Morgan, man, just because that's hilarious.
Exactly. And for all of these reasons, he is number four for me. So for you guys, who is your guys' number four?
My number four is Tampa Bay Lightning defenseman Victor Hedman.
That is
and
low or high, however you want to say it, but that is...
It's low. So the Tampa Bay Lightning are my second favorite team, and I'm going to give you guys some reasons why. Victor Hedman is fantastic, but I think he had a worse year than some people might say. The points are as consistent as they've been for him, but a lot of the advanced stats for him were leaning a lot more towards a great NHL defenseman rather than an elite NHL defenseman. And I think some people overrate what Hedman did this year and underrate what Ryan McDonough did this year. McDonough was so pivotal for Tampa's truly amazing success. He was elite on the power play. So good. And Victor Hedman, I don't have Ryan McDonough in my top 10. He wouldn't be. But I think he had a lot more of a reason to do with Tampa's amazing success. I think the whole team defensively did too. But Victor Hedman, I think, is still a fantastic defenseman. I know a lot of people that have him as the best defenseman in the league. I think you guys do too. But I can see why. I mean, he's a fantastic defenseman, both offensively and defensively. A great two-way guy. And again, that's kind of why this was so hard, because putting Victor Hedman number four was honestly just grueling for me. But I think he's the fourth defenseman in the league right now. He likely will be a lot higher next year. He likely will, to me, have a rebound season. But for me, again, I think he's the best defenseman on Tampa. But I think his contributions were a little bit overrated, even if he still is one of the top defensemen in the NHL.
Yes, sir. Okay, so Nico, do you want to give your
Sorry, you were lagging there a second. Yeah, my number four is Brent Burns. Unfortunately,
he wasn't even on my list.
I'm not a Brent Burns fan, but it's kind of hard to not have him in my list. I wasn't gonna have him in there at all, but I'm like, yeah, you know, I probably should. He led defense in scoring with 83 points. He's a former Norris Trophy winner, and he's been voted top 10 three times in the last couple years. It's just so hard to watch him actually play defense.
It's just non-existent.
It just doesn't really exist. There's like three or four times a game where it's like, man, what are you watching? Like, there was this play, I think, I want to say it was a couple weeks into the season where, It was against Ottawa, and it was like Mark Stone was coming down the right side, and Brent Burns is watching him. They make eye contact. He goes to put his stick in front of him, and he just misses the puck and then pivots and just stops and just let him skate right by. And it was like, what? And I've seen that play like a lot of times. If he doesn't poke the puck away out of the first poke, he'll just stop skating. He'll just stop. And I'm like, what is happening here? But I don't know. It's kind of, if you won a Norris Trophy and you're the top leading scoring defenseman, it's like I kind of have to have him up there. And that's it. That's all I got for you.
Jay, what is your number four or three? I can't remember.
Okay, my number four, I'm not really going to say that much because we already did talk about him, is Roman Josi. I just think he, again, like you said, Nashville is, if he leaves, Nashville kind of is out. And because of that reason, that proves how valuable he is. So for that reason, he is my number four defenseman. We've already talked enough about him, so I won't say anything more.
All right, your number three.
My number three, NHL defenseman, or wait, no, this is my number two because Roman Josi is my number three.
Wait, I thought you said Roman Josi was your number four.
Riley's my number four.
Oh,
and then Josi's my three.
Okay, then we'll go into our top three. So, Nico, what's your three?
Okay, so, well, my number three is Mark Giordano. I know we mentioned him a little bit earlier. Where do you have Mark Giordano on your list, Nate?
I have Mark Giordano in my top three.
In top three. Okay, where do you have him?
He was number five.
Okay, do you have him number two then?
I might.
Okay. All right, well then.
Yes, I do. Okay.
Okay. All right, then we'll just team up on this one. So, for me, Mark Giordano, he's an undrafted. I think he might be one of the best undrafted players for defense in NHL history.
Recently, at least.
I would just say recently.
Out of the recent. Let's just say recently, because it does put that same.
After the lockout. After the 05 lockout. Yeah, after the 05 lockout, that's, I think, from then on, there's two different eras.
How about that?
Yeah, salary cap era, there you go. He was always, it's kind of strange, because when I first think of Mark Giordano, I always think about playing him in NHL 09 with Dion Phaneuf. And I always, and I always liked Giordano more than Phaneuf. Like, he would always skate faster, his shot was a little bit better, he scored more goals. Anyway, but Mark Giordano has always just kind of been there, like waiting in the grass, snake waiting in the grass. Like,
Jerome again. You know, sometimes like, I don't understand why you say some things. Like,
I just say it. Like, he was like a snake in the grass, and as soon as Jerome again left, he's like, "It's my time." So, but no, ever since Jerome again left, he's been an all-star the last six years. It's so strange. Like, he just became better as soon
flipped
as
the switch.
As soon as,
you know,
Jerome
crazy?
Left,
even though he was
he
an all-star,
became good.
People didn't really like. People didn't really mention well, him, since, which is crazy.
Like, since his 30-year-old season, because he's older. Like, nobody was like
experience, well, baby. Know. That's why we only have like that's who? Why we only have like 40 GMs. There's only they just rotate.
Yeah, as soon as Mark Giordano retires, he's gonna become the number one GM.
Number one GM prospect.
No, ever since his 30-year-old season, like, he's been an all-star for the last 6 years. He's been a top 10 Norris voting trophy, and he won the Norris trophy last season. Like,
certainly
at the age
so.
Of, at the age of 35, I mean, the age of 35, he scored 74 points and was a plus 39.
I remember, like, what I did at 35.
Wow. Like, wow. I knew he was good, but, like, I didn't think he could reach that level, and he did, and I gotta say, it was an absolute treat watching him play this last season for sure. And you didn't really see it coming, though, because the last two seasons, he only had like 39 points, 38 points. And while he was great, you know, a great defenseman, he wasn't top 10. But last season, he just was like, hey, I'm here, bye. Time to take this Norris, and I'll see you later. Like,
I'm just going to grab
so
it real
straight.
Quick.
I'm going to grab this real quick. I'll see you later. But yeah, I mean, 74 points. I mean, I think he was third in defensive scoring last year, maybe second. I can't really say much else. I mean, if you had to watch him last season to really appreciate what he did, and if you didn't, you know, if he was in an American market, I don't think he would have won the Norris, though. I'll just say that. But since he's in Calgary, and Calgary did good, he did good, and a great defenseman.
Speaking of good players with success, my number three best defenseman right now is Alex Pietrangelo. And some people might say, like Nico, say this is a little bit high. To me right now, I feel like with Alex Pietrangelo, you guys know, I'm a Dallas Stars fan. Besides Blues fans, I think Dallas Stars have seen their fair share, and frankly, enough of Alex Pietrangelo to get a good gauge on him. But this past season, he was already, to me, a top 15 defenseman, but he just stepped in his game so well, and in the playoffs, we got to see a big sample size from him, and just how dominant he was. I think when it comes to St. Louis, there wasn't a true one player that really put them over the top, but for most of those rounds, Alex Pietrangelo was the guy that always seemed to play well, was always consistent, and even in the regular season when St. Louis wasn't doing that great, he was still having a pretty decent season, and there was rumors of him getting traded back in like November and December. He was almost a Toronto Maple Leaf, basically. That was what a lot of people were saying, but I feel like so when it comes to his offense, when it comes to his defense. There's a two-way game that he commands. He's just so consistent, so simple, but just so effective. And he likely won't be this high next year. I think this is the peak of him, winning that Stanley Cup, obviously. But just the year that he had at the late 20s, I think this is his peak right now, but a pretty good peak at that.
And then the Stanley Cup just puts him over the top, does it not? Like, if you win the Stanley Cup, that just gives you like a 10% boost of like who you are.
You get more ego at that point. Yeah. But at my number two, might as well say, I have Mark Giordano. Like Nico said, he just had a brilliant year. Again, like he said, he had 39 points in 16-17, 38 points in 17-18, and just blasted out like 40 more points, man. It was absolutely
74 ridiculous. Out of nowhere, in the snake and the grass, but ready to pounce. Like, oh, what a year.
Famous quote, Nico.
Yes, sir.
You're welcome. Okay. I don't know what you're talking about at the time,
Nico,
but I'm going to use it.
I should have the same second defenseman in so Erik stupid. Karlsson, right, Nico?
Yeah, my number two is Erik Karlsson, number
exactly.
one, Victor Hedman.
So I have the same as Nico. I have Erik Karlsson, number two. Obviously, he's amazing offensively. 2015-16 with Ottawa, had 82 points. 2016-17 with Ottawa, 71 points. 2017-18 with Ottawa, 62 points. Again, these are 1 year, they did great, obviously, in that 2016 year. But other than that, the Ottawa has been pretty bad. Yet he still puts up at least 65 points in pretty much all of his seasons. In San Jose, he had, what's it called? In San Jose, he had 45 points in 53 games. A situation like Letang, where just because he was injured, he put up less points, but his points per game were still good. So if he played a full season, he would have been up there with the big boys, which he is, which is why he's number two. He just proven himself. He played on a broken foot and still was probably the best defenseman in the NHL. So I don't really need to say that much about him, just because you guys already know how good he is. He's just crazy. EK65, number two on my list. Two Norris trophies, and that's pretty much why he's number
two. I've always really liked Erik Karlsson.
Good hair, too.
Especially, for Erik Karlsson, really quick, I always liked him, and I especially thought that what's underrated about his development is not only did he get to learn under Daniel Alfredson, but he also got to learn from one of the best Russian defensemen of all time, Sergei Gonchar, for the first couple years of his career. And what's underrated a lot is, like, you see a lot of what Gonchar did, which is, like, he does that little curl thing at the point, and he waits for someone to, like, come next to him. And that was what Gonchar was known for. He would draw someone in and then do that quick little backhand pass to the guy back door for that 1-tee. And you see that so many times with Erik Karlsson. And I know it's little things that you see, and I know it's probably not what he dedicates it to, but at the same time, it's like you have a guy who he got to learn on the tutelage of some fantastic players. But Erik Karlsson now, I only have him number two. Just the last season he had where he was in Ottawa, it was like that whole team was garbage. Like, he tried his hardest, and I mean, he missed 10 games too. And at the end of it, it's like, man, I just want to get out of here. He goes to San Jose. He only plays 53 games, 45 points still. If he plays the full season, you know, and he's not injured, he probably wins the Norris. So give it next season with a full season. Maybe hopefully he's not injured. He could potentially win the Norris Trophy, but the next guy for my number one is, it's hard to knock him off for if he's not injured too. So we go to our number one then. Who was your? Did we already talk about your number one and two then, Grev?
I had number two, Mark Giordano. You guys had number one, Hedman.
Well, two, Erik Karlsson, right, and number one, Victor Hedman. Right now, me and Nico Green on our top two picks for the defense, which means we are right and Grav is wrong.
False.
But yeah, Victor Hedman, obviously he won the Norris Trophy a year ago, which was his only one, but still deserving. And obviously Tampa Bay has been crazy good these last 2 years, and Victor Hedman has been the guy to help out that defensive core, because before they got Ryan McDonagh in that first year where they're kind of going for it when Stamkos got back from injury, he was their only like great defenseman. Mikhail Sergachev was there, but he was injured and honestly not that great when he was there. So it was pretty much just and Anton Strahlman, can't forget about him. He's actually okay. Solid number three defenseman in my opinion. So you had him and Victor Hedman. So when you only have those two guys, and again it's very top heavy defensively, you need to lean on them, and Victor Hedman really did that, and he used that to his advantage, as he kind of, like, when you have that much pressure, you can either fall and, you know, not do well, but some people rise to the occasion under pressure, and Victor Hedman seemed to do that, and he's just been crazy good. I find it hard to talk about these guys who are at the top, just because it's kind of like they're good at everything. You can't just pinpoint one thing, you know what I mean? Like, they're good defensively, they're good offensively, so I can't really pinpoint one thing with Hedman. He's just really good.
I really... What's kind of strange, it was like up until I think he was around like 24, 25, like who cares about Victor Hedman, right? Like nobody even thought about him whatsoever.
That weird guy with the weird haircut.
He still has a weird haircut. He says though, yeah. he takes the worst pictures. Can we talk about that? He takes the worst pictures. Like I've never seen a more, like, this might seem a little weird, but doesn't he remind you of like that one football jock who just in his, like, underneath his bio is like, gonna crush something after this. that's what he reminds me of every time.
If you want a good laugh, just look at his draft pictures back in like 2008. Man, the guy just did not know what to do. Just a Russian kid, 18 years old, poor guy, man.
he's so bad. I mean I don't know if they teach people how to take pictures in Sweden, but I mean, like,
oh yeah, why did I say he was Russian? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, true. No, but I mean, say, look at Erik Karlsson without his mustache. He looks super strange too.
Yeah, honestly, without his mustache he looks weird.
He looks so strange. But pictures aside, Victor Hedman has quickly, not only is he number one on this list, he's also like my number two favorite defenseman. My list, and every time it's a common theme between why I like players, but I like watching players with how they play defense, because I think he plays defense a little bit differently than everyone else. Obviously, he's a tall guy, 6'8", one of the largest humans on the ice all the time,
basically,
and he uses his wingspan like to take advantage. Like, he'll put one arm out. I mean, you watch a lot of Tampa Bay games, so you know. You ever watch him put his arm out one way, and then he'll put his stick out another way, and it's like he's punching one guy with one hand. And
then he's embodiment of a beast defensively. He just, what he wants to do, he'll just do it. Like, nothing will get in his way at that point.
And it's crazy. I will take it. No, word out of Jay's book, it's crazy what he
it's
does.
It's crazy. He's certified crazy, number one in the NHL.
He is certified crazy. But yeah, he scores timely goals. I'll give him that. He doesn't score a lot, but when he does score, I always feel like it's a third period goal. I want to see his stats for third period points, because I feel like he, like, the first couple periods, obviously, he'll put up some points here and there, but when the game gets down to it, I feel like he's one of the most clutch defensemen, if that makes sense. He always makes that big play. And again, you watch a lot of him, Grav. So he's always out there during the third period making that quick outlet pass to either Kucherov or whoever to score that other point. Or, I mean, there was a point, I mean, obviously last year he was injured, but didn't he do like some spinorama where it was like there was like 20 seconds left in the third period? Not spinorama,
yeah,
but
I think, you know, I remember about that game. Yeah, I think,
yeah,
I remember
it was
that,
like,
game.
They came back in that game where they were up like, or they were down 4-1 against New Jersey, I think it was, or something like that. And they came back and it was like 4-4, and then he did something crazy. But
crazy.
He did crazy. But he is definitely, he's number one on my list, and between him and Erik Karlsson, you could put the two on each other.
Same
tier. It's whatever. Yeah, you could put the same. I mean, like, but Grav, you did a video today or the other day about you put Erik Karlsson at generational tier. Do you think that Victor Hedman can reach that? Because, I mean, I think he's at that point right now where he's just that good.
Yeah, he was definitely the closest guy to that. And segmenting onto that, I think Victor Hedman just overall. I think next year will be a year that he kind of changed my mind a little bit about him. I think he'll have a little bit more of a dominant year. I don't think it was a lack of intent. I think he might have just been a little bit banged up for the past couple of years. If he is a bit more healthy, I would say I think he's going to have a monster year for sure. Probably will be possibly number two next year. But I'm feeding into that Erik and Karlsson talk. So you guys know, now at this point, number one, the one guy I have left is Erik Karlsson. And I know some people might say that he's not what he used to be, or he's injured, or whatever. I don't care about that stuff. I don't care about that stuff. When he is healthy, he is the best defenseman in the world. And to me, I don't think there's, at least in my mind, me personally, I don't have too many questions about that. When he is healthy, he's the best defenseman in the world. When he is healthy, I think he might be a top five offensive defenseman of all time. I think he's that good. He's been that dominant. And when he is healthy again, which is the big factor, he wasn't completely healthy, and that factored into it. I think he also was kind of overblown with some of his defensive miscues. This past season when he was banged up, he kind of reminded me of a John Klingberg, where he wasn't, or at least a John Klingberg a couple of years ago, where he wasn't terrible defensively, but he made these big mistakes that everybody seemed to just dunk on time after time again, and that's fine, but I don't think he's this terrible defensive defenseman anymore, or he never really was. He's just average, I would say. But when you get the type of offense that Erik Karlsson brings, who cares? He's Erik freaking Karlsson. And I think when he is healthy next season, if he is, he'll change a lot of minds, because I think if he gets to play full 82 games with San Jose, he'll be an absolute beast. And I see San Jose, if Erik Karlsson is healthy, winning the Pacific Division. I can't see otherwise at that point. He's just so good when he is healthy, so dominant. And to me, while it is close, I think he is the number one defenseman in the league right now.
I'll give you that. I like Erik Karlsson. I've never hit anything against him. I just feel like he's... like. Don't you feel like he won more Norris trophies than just two?
Yeah. That's true.
It feels like he's won or should have won
like three or four at least. It feels like, oh, when everything, but oh, he must have won like three or four, just because he had like that 4 or 5 year stretch with Ottawa where they were not that great and he was just still amazing. He carried them on a broken foot to the Stanley Cup, a goal away from the Stanley Cup final. Like, wow. Like, he was really good. He was certified crazy.
And that's the thing, like, people say because he's injured, he's not that good anymore. He was the best defenseman in the world when he had a broken foot. Like, the guy plays great when he's injured, and I don't know if that's the greatest excuse. But, again, I can see why you won't have him as number one. That's perfectly fine. But to me, again, he's the most valuable defenseman in the world. I think he's the best in the world.
Well, from 2012 to 2017, he was ranked either number one or two he was ranked number two. And he won the Norris Trophy in 2014-15. But he was ranked number two for voting in Norris Trophy ranking as well. I want to say that he's one, like, when it's all said and done, do you think he has a better career than Nicholas Lidström as, like, a Swedish defenseman? I know Nick Lidström. He won, like, a million Norris Trophies. How many Norris Trophies did he win? Like, eight?
Yeah, like, something stupid. Like, he was basically the defensive version of Alex Ovechkin with his Maurice Richards. Like, it was just ridiculous.
So, I mean, at the end of it, hopefully, I do want to see Erik Karlsson win a cup. Same thing can be said for Victor Hedman. I just think I've seen a lot more of Erik Karlsson than I have Hedman. But in saying that, you know, this list was definitely hard, right? Would you say this is one of the harder lists to do?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like,
I would say it's the hardest out of all of them. I think the center's one was easier even then.
Yeah, there's so many great. This is the, I would say this generation, like, honest, like, this generation is really great for defensemen.
And like, then the next generation, you got Quinn Hughes, Cale Makar, Miro Heiskanen, Rasmus Dahlin. That's gonna be so ridiculous too.
Everybody decided to tell their kids to become D's so that they can get money.
Basically, at that point, like, he's like an Anton Strawman, man.
There's no money in that forward game, boys.
Time to you want to be a right winger? The parents be like, no, you're a defenseman now.
You're a defenseman now.
Right-handed. I don't care if you want to shoot left-handed.
That's literally what Philip Broberg did. Edmonton Oilers first round pick. He was a center, like age 11. Then his coach said, no, you're a defenseman now. Which, as a Swedish player, I mean, you might as well. Why not?
No, I just find it funny that a parent might be like, you're playing defenseman and you shoot left-handed, but you're going to shoot right-handed now because that's what
you're a right-handed defenseman now.
You shoot right-handed. I'm not. Okay, the parents aren't buying him any left-handed sticks. Only right-handed sticks. Imagine they forced that.
Can only imagine. All right, so last week I asked you guys, what was your favorite sandwich?
Okay. What's this question?
This week I'm going to ask you to rank. In celebration of this defenseman list, I'm gonna ask you to rank your top three fast food places.
Ooh, okay.
Ooh.
Does shawarma count as fast food?
Yeah.
Number one, shawarma, easy. That's light work.
I've never even heard of that. You gotta explain what that is.
Shawarma I know what it is.
You gotta explain that. Yeah, I know, but he doesn't. Do you know what? You don't know what shawarma is, right?
I mean, I know what it is, but like not.
It's almost like
for all the people in U.S., what do they do?
It's almost like a pita, like wrap type deal, but there's a lot more like, it's like meat and it's like authentic. Like, I don't know how to describe. How do you describe a shawarma? How do you describe it?
Okay, let me. Okay, so I know what that is, but hold on, I meant fast food chain places. Okay. That's what I should say.
Like a chain.
That's what I should
say. So I would say, KFC. In that case, I would say like a shawarma chain, but you guys don't have that in America. So I'll just say.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. America's
so never. I'll just say, I was just going to name like a place, but you guys won't even know what I'm, you guys will think I'm speaking.
Number one for me is Chick-fil-A. Number two is Whataburger. Number three is a tough one for me. I'd go for maybe Taco Cabana, which is more of a
I've southern, only eaten at those Mexican places place. Once for the first two you said. The other one, I don't even know what you're talking about.
I've heard of Taco Cabana.
As a Canadian.
Yeah. Honestly, like, number three could go, like, a lot of different places. I don't have, like, one specific place besides Chick-fil-A and Whataburger that I'm like, I love this and I need this all in my life, but yeah.
For me, it's like, I guess Popeyes will be up there. Popeyes is really good. You guys have Popeyes in America, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So Popeyes, and then I don't know, really. I don't have fast food that much.
I got. So there's this. It's a local thing to Illinois, and anybody who has been, I think, kind of to the Midwest can heard about it. But there's this place called Portillo's.
Oh, I know what that which is. Yeah,
which is absolutely amazing food. Everything that is there is amazing. That's my number one favorite.
Isn't that
place.
Famous in Chicago?
Yeah, I actually know the owner, ironically enough. He's a good guy. So that's my number one. My number two, I like White Castle, man. Like,
have you seen the movie Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle?
I know.
No, have you seen that movie?
I know. Anybody who just heard me say White Castle is like, dude, really?
Yeah, but have you seen that movie?
Anybody, I know. The thing is with White Castle, man, you can get legit like 150 burgers for like $10. And like you can feed a whole party of people. And you could eat like 15
They're
of them
just,
and
like,
not
normal
feel
sliders.
Bad. Like, yeah, but I could eat like... this is going to sound gross, but I once ate a 20-pack of them once by myself. I ate the whole thing.
How big are they?
They're like normal size. You can't see I'm making the burger thing with my hands, but they're small little burgers. They're not like huge or anything, like it's whatever. But I ate like a whole bag of those. I mean, the after effects of them, they'll get me started. But those, like, but when they go when they go in, it's nice.
Yeah.
Better out than in, I always say.
What's that from Shrek?
Yeah.
All right, so my number three, so I have Portillo's and then White Castle. My number three place, I'm going to be honest, I kind of feel like McDonald's is stepping
up. Yeah, I was
going
to say that too. I was just going to throw McDonald's in there because I don't think it's good, but it's just safe, you know, if you need, you know what I mean? It's classic and it's like a safe option.
And they've become a lot better in the last couple years.
I'm not going to go as far in saying that, but they're just like a safe option.
No, I mean like
their
sandwich-wise, like if you're going to pay for like a $5 and up burger, like you're actually going to get like something decent. Like it's not... Like, it's not like it doesn't look like it just came out of the freezer. versus like if you're gonna pay for like a $1 like cheeseburger, yeah, you're paying for $1 worth of cheeseburger, and that's what you're getting. Like, I don't know. I like their they have really good chicken strips. I like their chicken strips. They have this good
fries are always what I go for, man.
They have this good like cranberry salad. They have a good cranberry salad.
Who goes McDonald's for? I'm sorry, but that's just...
I do. Sometimes, hey, if I'm not paying for it, and someone says I'm going to McDonald's, I'll ask for that sometimes. Like, hey, it's good. But that's my top three for fast food. So that's what I got. That's my question for this week, though. There you go, Graf.
I like it. Nico's random question of the week, baby. I like it. That's a new segment. There we go. It has been born.
Because yeah, it's the off-season, it's taking over for the quiz that everyone loves.
Dude, your quiz sucked. I can make a bigger quiz in a second. You know what? Next week, I'm going to come with a question and I'm going to come with a quiz just to show you how a quiz should be done.
That's, whoa.
I have to be grabbed, though. I don't care how much you like show me your dominance.
I'm still a hockey god. I will beat my own hockey quiz just to prove that I'm a hockey god.
I should be grabbed.
To prove himself worthy again, like four.
All right, boys.
All right, we are done for episode 12 of the Religion of Hockey podcast. Of course, make sure you follow the Religion of Hockey podcast. Make sure you're rating it on iTunes. Whatever you need to do, make sure you're doing it, downloading and doing everything. Sharing it with your friends is also very important. Get it out there, boys, trying to spread it around. Make sure you follow the Twitter account as well, ROH Podcasts. Get that going if you haven't already. Jay, Nico, where can everybody find you?
FOURONESIXJAY 416J on Twitter and other places too, but Twitter's the main hub for that, so just go follow the Twitter and you'll find it.
Cool. You can follow me on Twitter at Nico from the TO. You can also find my articles and hockey stuff on Puck Prose at Puck Prose. I'm also Penguins writer now as well. So you can find me at Pens Labyrinth. You know what? It's weird. Can I just say something really quick about that? So my friend is the site manager up there, right? And he's like, hey, you want to come write about Pittsburgh stuff? And I'm like, sure, I'll send you an article or two. And he's like, yeah, just send your information. I'm like, okay. He signs me up. So, yeah, that's happening. But anyway, yeah, you can follow me there. I'm also on Insta at Nico from the TO. Follow me for some good old Kirby Dak looks. Because, you know, I know Kirby Dak, and he's a good guy. Doc? Is it Doc or Dak? I still haven't gotten... I'm calling him Dak. What up, Dak? What up, Dak? All right, boys. Well, let's see. We'll check him out in the next one.
All right, everybody. We'll see you in the next video. Or video. Oh, my gosh. I got YouTube on the brain. See you in the next podcast.
It's hard. I'm late. See you guys.
Like and subscribe on the YouTube channel we don't have yet. We'll see you in the next one. Keep preaching hockey. And goodbye.